with the 14th and 15th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Today is February 8th, a beautiful Wednesday in South Philadelphia, and welcome to another episode of Journey to the Draft presented by AAA. And I have to start with the date because last week when we recorded the podcast, some news broke immediately after we filmed it. So if you downloaded and listened to it, you were probably like, why didn't they cover this? Why didn't they cover that? It was like we just recorded a couple hours ago. So I'm Chris McPherson. Alongside me is Fran Duffy, a man who does not go back in his Twitter timeline to delete tweets of bad scouting reports because he does not miss.
Don't have the need to. I miss plenty. So, you know, I just don't have the time to do it.
No Alex Smith this week, unfortunately.
Right. Yep.
So we will just talk a lot of trash about him and rip all of his evaluations to this point. But we will miss him. The man behind the glass in the control room producing this is the one and only Brian Thomas. So if you missed last week's episode of Journey to the Draft presented by AAA, we had a great conversation with Lance Zierlein from NFL.com. He went into the Eagles' draft needs, some interesting ones there. He had a mock draft pick selection for the team. He delved into why he went with that. And it's a good conversation to listen to because at this point of the year, Fran, it's not like it's all newsy. It's not like, you know, if you listen to one podcast, you can't go back and re-listen to it.
Yep.
Because we're really just beginning to learn. I mean, you obviously know all these prospects in some detail to this point and some in great detail with your film study, but we're still, I think, as fans, learning about a lot of these guys. We've heard of, like, the big names to this point, but we're starting to learn about the second tier, the second wave of guys.
Yep.
And you can go back and just listen to some of these conversations to find out more about these prospects throughout the entire draft process.
Yeah, no question. And Lance is always great at getting you that inside information from all the people that he talks to. Whenever I go, it's funny, all the people in the media, everybody says, oh, I talked to this scout or this scout or this GM. Lance, when you go to like the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game and the Combine, Lance is always talking to somebody with an NFL jacket. Always. That guy just never stops. So you know he talks to people. You can absolutely trust that he's going to give you what he hears, and you got to trust what he hears. So a big fan of Lance. So absolutely go back and listen to last week's show.
All right. So this week we have Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. That site does a great job evaluating not just pro, because everyone knows about their work with the NFL, and you know Chris Collinsworth has incorporated into the Sunday Night Football broadcast on NBC, but they do a great detail of work on the college side as well. We'll discuss his mock draft selection for the Eagles, who are some of the polarizing prospects in this year's draft class, and taking a look at the Eagles' first-round pick from a year ago in Carson Wentz. What did he show as a rookie that maybe was not seen on the college tape? But first, let's get into the latest news in Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, we'll kick things off here on Draft Buzz with a little Eagles-related nugget, okay? Nothing too crazy going on right now at the NovaCare Complex. And, of course, as soon as I say this and we record this podcast, some news I'm sure will break. But Howie Roseman joined Dave Spadaro on the Eagles Live podcast, which you can download on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you consume podcasts. And he said something that I found a little interesting. I want to get your take on this, Fran. That the Eagles do look at mock drafts. And it is mock draft season. Every media outlet has one at this point. Some have already had multiple variations of them. He said the Eagles do study mock drafts for two main reasons. One, they want to get a sense of who are the analysts putting on a consistent basis in the first round. You know, if player X is always in a certain spot in the first round, he's probably going to be a first round selection. They're getting some kind of information. And he also wants to see where players are going in terms of which teams they're going to kind of get a sense of the other team's needs and possibly who they might be targeting. So I thought it was interesting that as much as some people mock the mock draft process, you know, everybody writes them, it's clickbait, it generates a ton of views. There are a lot of people on the other side of the fence who say, you don't get a lot of information out of it, it's not really worthwhile. It's interesting to hear that an NFL team actually uses this in the information gathering process.
Yeah, and I'm sure that Howie and everybody upstairs, they're not the only team that does it. I think a lot of teams, when they look around and you see the reputable sources, you know, they're not going to some of the smaller draft sites and seeing who Joe Blow thinks the Eagles are going to take at 14. But when you look at some of the people that we have on our show all the time, whether it's Daniel Jeremiah, Mike Mayock, Charles Davis, Lance Zierlein last week, the Kuipers and McShays of the world, the guys that talk to people, have been around in the business for a long time, have a lot of those connections across the league, you start to get a sense of, all right, well, they're constantly connecting a tight end to the Detroit Lions. Well, you might get a sense, you know what, there's probably going to be a tight end drafted by the Detroit Lions in the first couple of rounds. So it does certainly help in terms of the planning process. Every little bit of information helps. And that's why, actually, I had Dan Hatman, former Eagle scout, on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast last week, and he talked about the role of a general manager just in the player acquisition process and talking about the draft and how, look, there are times when the Eagles select Carson Wentz, that wasn't Doug Peterson's pick. It wasn't Howie Rosen's pick. It wasn't Jeffrey Lurie's pick. That was the organization's pick. They had a dozen sets of eyeballs get on Carson Wentz by the time they called his name in April. So the question then becomes, who is it that makes that final call? Well, the role of the general manager is to acquire all the possible pieces of information about every single player across the organization. Every little bit of information helps. So, of course, they're going to look at these mock drafts. That's another piece of information that they could potentially glean something valuable out of.
And they also want to get a sense of, if certain scenarios play out, what would the Eagles do in that situation? We don't know if the Eagles are going to pick at 14 or 15. That'll be determined by a coin flip at the combine. But depending on those first 13 or 14 selections, many different things can happen. And there'll probably be a surprise or two, especially you know, when you get to that part of the draft. But still, they want to get a sense of, if player Z ends up going to the Browns at number 12, well, what could that mean for the Eagles? So that's a little bit of Eagles-related stuff there. Our next item comes from our good friend Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com. He says that O.J. Howard, the tight end from Alabama, his film shows a player who is uninterested in finishing blocks, lackadaisical when not involved with the play, and a player not a big part of the passing offense. Now, he still grades out as a late first-round pick, but there are a lot of questions with him. Going along with O.J. Howard here, Teron Davenport, who covers the Eagles for USA Today, he mocked Howard to the Eagles in his most recent mock draft.
Well, I do understand Teron's point of view with adding an O.J. Howard, because you can never have too many good skill players on offense. And regardless of, obviously, we know that the Eagles have a lot invested in the tight end position, Brent Celek and Zach Ertz, Trey Burton, obviously, as well. But when you look at O.J. Howard, that was the big question going into the Senior Bowl. That's why 2 weeks ago at the Senior Bowl was so big for him, because his big question going in was his inconsistent hands. And he did have a series of drops. And Tony didn't mention that specifically, but that was a big question with him, was inconsistent blocks, but then or inconsistent hands. It's interesting that he saw the lackadaisical play and, you know, a guy that's uninterested in finishing blocks. Obviously, look, he's a tight end. He's not going to be a true mauler at the point of attack. And O.J. Howard is more, even though he's in that 245, 250 range, he's not going to be that, you know, 275-pound guy that you're going to put in almost as an extra offensive lineman. That's not necessarily his game. But it is very interesting, and he certainly does have questions to his game. That's why it was good to see him go and have such a great week down in Mobile and be so consistent. He was the practice player of the week, regardless of position, down there at the Senior Bowl. So O.J. Howard, an interesting name in the middle of the first round.
So no concerns?
I don't know. Not from what I've seen. The fact that he is considered kind of a universal first-round pick and he still decided to go to the Senior Bowl and still decided to compete each day, was great each day in practice, then went to the game, had a few catches in the first half, was blocking, did everything that he was asked from the entire week. I'm not necessarily worried about his competitiveness, especially coming from Alabama, too.
Thoughts about him being the Eagles' first-round pick?
I see, like I said earlier, with Teron's piece, you know, where he had the Eagles select him in the first round, to me, look, you've got Zach Ertz, who you know is a good tight end in this league, and you know that he can make an impact, but there's not all – the Eagles showed this year they can play up to three tight ends at any given time. Trey Burton is a restricted free agent. Brent Celek's getting a little bit older. Much like when you had Troy Vincent and Bobby Taylor and you drafted Lito Shepherd and Sheldon Brown, you can always add a position, regardless of what the perceived need is tomorrow.
Yeah.
You can always look a year or two ahead of time and say, look, is O.J. Howard the best player on the board? If he is, then you might make that decision.
Think of Jordan Hicks.
Yeah,
absolutely. Linebacker just a couple of years ago. So great debate there. Next item here, two players. Now, the NFL has not released the invite list for the scouting combine just yet, but two players reportedly have not been invited, and they both have off-the-field issues. Oklahoma running back Joe Mixon and Baylor wide receiver Ishmael Zamora.
Yeah, and the two big things with both of those players is that there is video of both incidents. So I think that's kind of the, not, I don't want to say the determining factor, but certainly does not help matters as they go to that game. So teams hoping to interview both players obviously are going to have to wait until those visits later in the process.
To me, part of a PR thing with the league, because how many players go to the combine? About 300?
Yeah.
You know, high 200s. I feel the years that I've gone, and I have to look back, this is probably like eighth or ninth combine, I would say, that I'm going to attend. The players who generally generate the most media buzz are the quarterbacks, especially if you have someone who's like the bona fide number one pick. I think back to like when Cam Newton came out in 2011. But it's also the off-the-field guys.
Yep.
You know, I think back to like Manti Te'o.
Yeah.
And that combine where
it was a disaster. I remember that
just
one.
Just the entire club lounge at Lucas Oil Stadium was packed.
Well, that's why Jameis's was such a big one, too, because you had both factors into that one.
Yes.
There were definitely some big ones for sure. Manziel was the same thing.
Those are typically the players who generate the most headlines.
Yep.
And the NFL does not want the story of the combine to be, should Joe Mixon be selected? You know, that's something they probably want to avoid. I think you make a great point with the video. Personally, I just hope that we are not in the position to have to promote a guy like Joe Mixon down the line.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to be the guy to write the fluff piece, the Brent Musburger, glad he's getting a second chance type article down the line. So
yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting with both guys, especially, you know, with the video aspect of it. How they're perceived, both by the media throughout this process, by each team throughout the process, individually in each of their own buildings, and then we'll find out. We'll find out at the end of April.
Yeah. Next time, so since we went to off the field issues, I wanted to have something a little more enlightening and encouraging,
a little heartwarming,
something to cheer for here. South Florida wide receiver Rodney Adams wants to use a combine to raise money for a program that benefits children who have lost loved ones. His mother was killed in an auto accident in 2013. He was invited to a Shrine game. He did not attend due to injury.
Yeah, and Adams is an interesting player. Obviously, look, you talk about the off-field, and it's awesome. And it's a great story, and you hope that he has a lot of success with that. Is from St. Pete. He's a local kid to Florida. Started his career at Toledo. Mm-hmm. Ended up finishing second all-time in the program's history in receptions and yards, touchdowns. Was very productive for them. Projects as a slot receiver, probably more of a late-round pick type.
All right. This is why at the top of the podcast I mentioned about the whole breaking news element. We had talked a lot about Corey Davis and the wide receiver debate. Is it he? Mike Williams at number one. In that position group, well, we found out right after we recorded the podcast, that Corey Davis will miss the combine due to an ankle injury. Now, he's not the only big-time player who's going to miss out. You have Ohio State safety Malik Hooker, who has a torn labrum and a hernia. You also have Florida linebacker Jared Davis, who was hampered for most of the second half of the season with an ankle injury. He, too, is expected to miss the combine. So, of those three guys, Fran, who is most impacted by not being able to perform in Indy?
This is really tough because I think all three are great players. I think all three are top 50 talents in the draft. Certainly Hooker and Davis, higher than that, probably both top 20 picks in this draft. It's upsetting not to see Davis run because I think he would have blown it up. I think he is so explosive. Reminds me a lot of Alec Ogletree, who was a former first-round pick to the Rams out of Georgia, kind of that sideline-to-sideline player. We know what kind of athlete Malik Hooker is, drawing comparisons to Ed Reed and his ball skills. But I think it impacts Corey Davis the most, and let me explain why. Here's why I think that. Because Corey Davis had the chance to go to the Senior Bowl, chose not to in order to prepare for the combine. So that was a chance for him to further vault himself ahead of Mike Williams. Because to me, on tape, I like Davis more than Williams. So right off the bat, I think while they're close, I think Davis is a little bit better. So he had the chance to even increase that gap at the Senior Bowl, didn't take it because he apparently had I think it was a hamstring or something minor. It was a tiny injury that he chose, I'm not going to even go. I'm going to focus on rehab and go to the combine. Then he gets hurt. He has the ankle injury. Apparently he's going to be ready for rookie mini camps in May, so it's nothing to be worried about long term, but he's not going to work out. So he had two chances now to kind of separate that gap, separate himself between himself and Mike Williams and John Ross and some of these other receivers, Juju Smith-Schuster, anybody else that might be considered as a first-round type talent, and he was going to miss out on his second chance. Like I said, I like Davis more on tape, so to me I think he's a better player, but that's where I think it's a little bit of a separating factor.
Is he expected to be ready for pro day, or is he not going to be able to work out at all through the process?
That's a good question. Yeah,
so I think that when I look at Jared Davis, if he's not ready by pro days, then you're kind of like, this kept him out for most of the second half of the season, or it slowed him on the field. Malik Hooker, two pretty decent injuries there with the hernia and the labrum, torn labrum. So how long is that recovery process?
And they haven't said which labrum, because there's the labrum, there's like two different labrums, and they haven't said which one. They haven't clarified that yet, which is kind of interesting. But then also too with Davis, it was an ankle, and I think it was a high ankle, and you know how nagging that can be. That can kind of derail a player's season. He like would come back for a game, and then he'd miss a couple, and then he'd come back. He was like doubtful for the SEC title game against Alabama. Then he turned around, and he played that day. So like, my guess would be he's not playing. He's not going to go to the combine. My guess would be, without knowing, that Davis would be good for his pro day.
All right, our next item here on Draft Buzz. A couple more things here. Albert Breer from the MMQB said that seeing Ole Miss tight end Evan Engram in person at the Senior Bowl reminded him of Aaron Hernandez. And if you remember, Breer used to cover the Patriots for the Boston Globe.
Yeah, and it makes sense because he's built very similarly, and there's very similar athletes. I mean, Engram is just over 6'3", just under 240 pounds, was an outstanding athlete and very, very productive for the Ole Miss Rebels. Lined up in the slot, was moved all around the formation, had great speed, showed that at the Senior Bowl. So you can see what, if you see him in person, you kind of see that movement. You see his ability to go up and get the football. He's a good route runner. He's a good kid. So, hopefully, obviously, that's the big difference there. Look, Evan Engram's a great talent. It's a great tight end class, and that's what's going to affect it, because I think when we talk about all these tight ends, whether it's a Jordan Leggett, whether it's an Evan Engram, whether it's Gerald Everett from South Alabama or Jake Butt or, a lot of these guys, any other year you'd be talking about them as, oh, they're locked for like, end round one, round two. Maybe some of these guys might fall. One of them's going to fall to like third, fourth round. I mean, it's a matter of averages. And one of those guys is going to fall. So it'll be very interesting to see where he ends up going in this draft.
All right, last item here. Former NFL Director of College Scouting and an Eagles executive, Greg Gabriel, said on Twitter that he has given 12 corners either first or second round grades in this year's class. But since it is a stopwatch-driven position, some of those grades could be impacted by their performances in Indy. So my question to you, Frank, is not which 12 guys do you think are those first or second round grades.
Who's going to get impacted?
Who do you think could run a slow time in Indy?
I think Desmond King will probably run a slow time. We kind of saw him struggle a little bit in one-on-ones down there in Mobile, and he got beat vertically by some receivers that are not known for their speed, a guy like Cooper Kupp and a couple other guys down there where he struggled keeping up downfield. Zay Jones was another who gave him some issues at different points. After that, I've heard some things about Cam Sutton and his long speed. We'll see how he runs. I love Cam Sutton on tape. He's already knocked because he's got short arms. No corner drafted in the last 5 years has shorter arms than Cam Sutton out of Tennessee, who's 5'11", 182 pounds. Not the smallest kid in the world, but is already going to get knocked for that. Who else isn't going to run well? I think Kevin King from Washington is the other big name that who's a big kid. I mean, he's – Scouts had him at 6'3.5" coming into the year. So he's a very big kid. No corner has been that tall drafted in the last 5 years. Great frame. We'll see how he runs.
I'm picturing Cam Sutton with like T-Rex arms, like running down the field.
Great kid too. We talked to him down at the Senior Bowl. He's not going to be our unofficial visit today, but a great kid. I think he gets it. I love watching him play. So we'll see. He's a guy to me that I think I'm a little bit higher on than most in the media.
All right, we will have our unofficial visit a little bit later in the podcast, as well as our conversation with Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. But up next, pick six players who will, quote-unquote, rise during the draft process.
Now it's time for pick six.
All right, Fran, so this week's pick six players who, You know, throughout the course of the draft process between now and end of April, we'll hear as risers.
Yep.
And this was actually a tough exercise because, you know, basically we kind of listed a bunch of ideas that we have for pick six segments for the entire, you know, length of the draft season. And came across this one, and we're like, we almost have to do it now. And in some ways, almost had to do it before, like, Senior Bowl. Because the way that the media covers the Shrine Game, the Senior Bowl now, it's hard to find these, quote-unquote, risers anymore. So it was a difficult exercise. May I kick things off? Do you mind?
Yeah, go for it. All right. Get us going.
So basically I wanted to figure out which positions will go higher. Okay, this is kind of the approach I took. I said, which positions typically will go higher?
Yep.
Quarterback comes to mind. I didn't really want to get into the quarterbacks. I kind of almost don't want to talk about quarterbacks from the Eagles standpoint just because we don't have to worry about it. Outside of, at some point we'll talk about this on the podcast, a late round developmental guy.
Hallelujah.
You know.
And Eagles fans should be very excited that we don't have to worry about a quarterback in this class.
Yes. So then I was like, well, which positions are weaker in this draft class that might get pushed higher as a result? So offensive line stood out to me. And so the first pick I have here is Utah tackle Garrett Bowles. And Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com said he's heard that there's some buzz that he could be the top left tackle prospect in this year's draft class. Many will say Cam Robinson from Alabama, but his size could be a potential issue for teams. He's a JUCO transfer. He only has 1 year of FBS football under his belt.
Yep.
That'll also be a question mark, but from an athleticism standpoint, he's someone who could make a Lane Johnson type rise. And some mock drafts have him already late first round, but if you're talking about potentially the top left tackle prospect, you know, this is a guy who possibly could go even higher than where some analysts have him right now.
Yeah, and like another guy that's kind of fits that role is or that mold is Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin, another one-year starter.
Yep.
At the FBS level. I haven't watched Bowles yet. I've heard a lot of good things.
Yeah.
I know he has some technique things to work out as well, but if he goes to the combine and lights up, because apparently he's got great feet, so if he's as athletic as people I've talked to say he is, that would be a really good thing for him in terms of moving up the board. I'll go with my first guy, and I'll stick at the offensive line spot. I wanted to take a player, and you mentioned it. If I had said this guy, a month ago, everyone said, "Oh yeah, who's this guy?" Taylor Moten, and he was my going into the Senior Bowl. He was my favorite offensive lineman going down there to Mobile, and he did not make me look bad whatsoever. He was certainly the best offensive lineman down there at the Senior Bowl. But still, not getting the love as a first or even early second round pick. And I don't think that he's going to be a first round pick. I don't. But I do think that he's going to be a top 50 selection when it's all said and done, whether it's at guard or at right tackle. He does have the frame to stay outside at right tackle. I think that Moten will be a guy that at 330 pounds, because that was the thing. I remember he walked out on stage down there in Mobile, and I said, man, he looks a little bit smaller than I thought, because I thought of him as a bigger guy. And then he got on the scale, and he was 330. I said, man, he kind of carries it well, and he moves pretty well for a guy who's 330 pounds. So I think Moten, he'll be a very interesting workout to see out in Indianapolis.
All right, so next position I went with, and we've already talked about this position group as being stacked.
Yes.
So it might be hard to classify him as a riser, but still I was thinking of someone who is flying a little under the radar, someone who's very athletic, and someone who I think will test well at the combine. And that's the thing that I'm thinking of for this pick here is, who's someone who, after the combine, people are going to say, that guy needs to be up higher on draft boards? And that's Miami tight end David Njoku. Miami has produced some great tight ends in recent years. It's been a little bit of a factory there. You know, Njoku has size and athleticism, very productive in the red zone. Something, of course, that teams like the Eagles are going to be looking to improve upon next season. So I know O.J. Howard is kind of the consensus top tight end at this point. But I wonder if Njoku, with his athleticism, could challenge Howard at some point down the line here.
Yeah, and that kid is so athletic, man. He was one of the first players I watched when we got back from the Senior Bowl. And it's 6'4", 245. He's actually somewhat local. He's from Cedar Grove, New Jersey, about just a little bit north of Newark in North Jersey. And he is so dynamic and actually a better route runner than given credit for. Great after the catch. I'll be interested to see how he tests. I think he's going to test extremely well. Jeremiah had him in the top 15. So he could very well rise, especially with a good combine. And I feel the same way about my second pick, John Ross, who a lot of people see as one of the best, one of the best game-breaking receivers in this draft class, known for his deep speed. Caveat here, does have knee injuries in his past, so that's something that will be factored in. He could be seen as a big faller for that. If he gets red flagged by teams during the medical check at the combine, that could be an issue. But I do expect that he's going to be one of the fastest receivers at the combine. He's a really good route runner. I've only watched one game, so the guy knows how to get off press coverage. He's a good route runner. He tracks the deep ball well. I mean, he does a lot of the things that you want from an undersized receiver. You're checking a lot of boxes there. So I like John Ross as a potential late first round, potentially even early second round type selection.
Interesting, because of his size, was very good in the red zone.
Yeah.
For the Huskies.
Yep.
You know, that's something that you think of a smaller receiver, they're not going to be productive there. No, he was not just a home run threat who could take the top off of defense. He could win inside the 20-yard line because of his ability to get off press coverage.
I need my little receivers. When I'm watching guys, like I want to see a smaller receiver get off press coverage and win that way, and he certainly did that. The game I watched was the Oregon game, and he scored 3 touchdowns in that game, all in the red zone, and I believe they were all in the first half. Really, really impressive.
All right, so third guy I went with, I went back to the offensive line, and I was trying to think of how every year there seems to be an interior offensive lineman who doesn't really get a lot of play during the draft process, but ends up being a first-round selection. You know, teams want to find a safe guy, you know, who's productive in college, they can plug in on day one and say, you know what, this could be our guard or center for the next 5, 10 years, what have you, and we're set there, we don't have to worry about it. So I don't know if he's going to be this guy this year, but Pat Elflein, interior offensive lineman from the Ohio State Buckeyes, you know, played in the Big Ten, has played all 3 interior offensive line spots, was a second-team All-American last year at right guard, first-team All-American at center this year. You know, just someone who I think that teams can say, you know what, I could put him in on day one, and our offensive line will be that much better.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how he measures in, because there have been some rumors that he could come in really short with short arms and all that, and he could get knocked for that. But good player, and you mentioned, I mean, he's started a ton of games for the Buckeyes, played at a very high level as a 3-year starter, a really, really intriguing player. Skipped out on the Senior Bowl, gave him a hard no, respectfully, but bowed out of the Senior Bowl. So I'll be very interested to see how he looks out in Indianapolis. My last guy, Charles Harris from Mizzou. My big thing is, I'm higher on this kid than I think most people are. I think he's going to end up being a top 15 pick, super explosive first step, and he knows how to use his hands. So typically guys with NFL size, and he's like 6'3", 240, needs to put on a little bit of weight, but not anything you're going to be alarmed about. 6'3", we'll say 240 pounds, quick first step, knows how to use his hands. He needs to improve a little bit as a run defender, but I think Charles Harris is going to end up being a legitimate top 20 talent in this draft.
We talked about him on the podcast last week, yeah. So certainly a name to watch throughout the process here. That is our pick 6, 6 players who we think will rise during the draft process. Now it's time for our Mr. Relevant, our conversation with Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
This week's Mr. Relevant on the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA, is Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at PFF_Steve. He is the host of the PFF Quarterback Podcast. And believe it or not, Steve himself is a former pro athlete. Well, did you know, Fran? Did you know that?
I did. And if you see him in person, Steve kind of towers over everybody. So it's not a surprise at all to know that he was once a star hurler on the mound.
So, Steve, career winning record in the minor leagues. Okay, that's all that matters at the end of the day. Steve, welcome aboard first and foremost. Before we look at the 2017 draft, I just want to take a quick rewind to the Eagles in 2016 and take a look at Carson Wentz. And Pro Football Focus had him graded out as the 14th overall prospect, the number 2 quarterback behind Jared Goff. When you looked at him on tape this season, Steve, what were some of the traits that he displayed as a rookie that maybe weren't quite as evident on the college tape, which were maybe some of the things that you had to project when seeing how Carson Wentz would fit in the NFL?
Well, I think the biggest thing with Wentz was always that projection from FCS to the NFL and, you know, getting up to game speed. And I just thought immediately, he looked pretty comfortable in that Philadelphia offense. So I thought that was one thing that really stood out. He got off to a really hot start, you know, very comfortable under center. And much like Dak Prescott with Dallas, you know, when you saw Jared Goff seem rushed and everything just seemed a little quick for him in his rookie season, whereas I think Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott, much more comfortable right off the bat. That was the biggest thing that I saw. And I thought, you know, his ability to just, you know, pretty much work through progressions a little bit more than he did. There's still bouts of, you know, hanging on one read and not necessarily working from one side of the field to the next that showed up in college that also carried over to the NFL. But I thought he did a better job overall than he did over at North Dakota State. So I think a positive first year certainly for Wentz.
So, Steve, sticking with the Eagles, in your most recent mock draft for Pro Football Focus, they have the Eagles selecting Clemson cornerback Cordrea Tankersley out of Clemson in the first round. What have you seen from Tankersley when you've watched him? Senior corner, was not at the Senior Bowl. What have you seen from him? What makes him that kind of value pick there in the top 15?
Yeah, Tankersley is a guy I go back and forth on a little bit. I think, you know, his good is very good. He's got the length and a lot of the size that I think NFL teams are looking for with that big corner, but he also moves a little bit better than I think most big corners. You know, a lot of times you see, say, the big Seattle cornerbacks will get exploited by shiftier route runners on underneath routes, but I think Tankersley does a little bit better job in that area, a little better job closing on the ball than some of the longer corners you've seen come into the NFL in recent years. Made a lot of plays on the ball, had 9 pass breakups, 4 interceptions last season. You know, the one question for him that I have is gets a little grabby in coverage, likes to play physical, and you see that a lot at the college level. Guys that you can play physical at the college level. You have, you know, no illegal contact rule, so you can get away with more, and I think it's always that challenge to decipher which guys are holding on for dear life because they can't cover and which guys are simply taking advantage of those college rules. I feel like Tankersley kind of toes that line a little bit, so I think there's a lot to like about him. I think there's a lot, you know, that he can do at the next level, play multiple coverages, just has to learn how to, you know, lay off just a little bit as far as, you know, the contact goes, picked up 7 penalties last year, and I think he's always kind of playing with fire, and that's something he'll have to adjust to in the NFL.
Steve, it's a stacked cornerback group, and it's a position that Eagles fans are going to keep a close eye on throughout the entire draft process. 2 guys in particular I want to ask you about here. One is a guy who Pro Football Focus has higher rated than most other mock drafts, other big boards at this point, and that's Jordan Lewis of Michigan. And the other player I want to ask you about is Quincy Wilson of Florida. He's been mocked to the Eagles in some mock drafts to this point. He's someone I think PFF has a little lower grade on than most other publications. Can you delve into your evaluations on those 2 guys, Jordan Lewis and Quincy Wilson?
Yeah, it's definitely a stacked cornerback class. I call it I thought the defensive interior class last year was similar. Just different flavors for different teams. What type of corner are you looking for? I think you can get your long corners like a Tankersley, like I was saying. You get your press corners. You have your zone guys. I look at Jordan Lewis, and I know he doesn't have the great size a lot of the NFL teams are looking for, but I think he's got great shiftiness. I think he's got just a feisty, man type of corner. I think he's played great coverage at Michigan, and while teams are always looking for that 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2 type of guy, I think in the NFL you need somebody that can match up with the better route runners, you know, the Antonio Browns, the T.Y. Hiltons of the league, and I think Lewis fits that mold for me. That's why I consider him more of a, you know, back end of the first round, early second round prospect, depending on the team, depending on the fit. But I think he has the ability to play that feisty man coverage. Aggressive, good ball skills, made some incredible interceptions at Michigan, and really has not given up a whole lot over the last two years. One of our top coverage cornerbacks in the nation the last 2 years. So I like a lot of what Lewis brings to the table. And I'm not necessarily lower on Wilson. I just think it's such a loaded cornerback class. He gets pushed down just a little bit. He's an aggressive man coverage corner. He'll get lost in off coverage just a little bit, but has all the skills you're looking for. I just want to see a little bit more down-to-down consistency from Wilson. Got beat a little bit more than some of the other top corners in the draft, but I do think he's got plenty of potential. I don't like him nearly. I don't think I like him as much as his teammate, Tease Tabor. A little bit more aggressive, Tabor. A little bit better ball skills, but I think Wilson probably going to end up as a second-round type of prospect for us.
Yeah, I completely agree on both of those guys. I agree with Jordan Lewis. I really like Jordan Lewis. The size will knock him a little bit, and I think we kind of see Quincy Wilson very similarly as well, and I'm also a big fan of Cordrea Tankersley. So while we're talking about players that maybe be seen a little bit higher or lower through PFF, going off of the mock draft and looking at your big board, who are some players in your personal mock draft that are going a little bit higher or way lower than what the big board suggests and what you've seen from what you guys have put out over the last couple of weeks?
Well, I know for sure we're lower on Cam Robinson of Alabama. And honestly, I haven't seen a whole lot of other mocks. I don't know if he's still going top 10 or first round. He's just a guy that we see as a bit more of a projection at this point, the big left tackle from Alabama. I see all the skills. I think a lot of his best blocks come on the move and the screen game, and he shows some pretty good athleticism. And that stuff flashes on tape. I just need to see him pass protect better. I haven't seen him play like a first-round offensive tackle yet in his career. A guy we're higher on, Jordan Willis from Kansas State. I thought he had a good finish to Senior Bowl week, but the guy, I don't know if he ends up being a first-round type of player, but I think a solid second-round type of prospect at the very least. Very productive at Kansas State. I know he beat up on some right tackles in the Big 12, but uses his hands pretty well, can get around the edge, played the run extremely well his senior year, and I just really like Jordan Willis. I know it's a loaded edge rusher class, especially with a lot of the underclassmen that came in, from your Miles Garrett to Derek Barnett and Charles Harris's and a lot of other guys. I just really like Jordan Willis, and I just think he's a guy that finds a way to get to the quarterback, and I still think he's probably a little undervalued in a lot of circles.
Steve, through your evaluations to this point, who do you expect to be the most, or maybe this could be a couple of different guys, the most polarizing prospects in this year's draft process?
I think Deshaun Watson it starts with him, because there's so much good to his game, and then there's a few things that you just want to see him do a little bit better when it comes to translating to the NFL, pure NFL quarterbacking type of things. He gets knocked for being a one-read guy, and I don't think it's an unfair criticism. It's something he's done throughout his career, the ability to fire through reads. I don't think we've seen it a whole lot throughout his career, so I think it's a fair criticism to bring it up. Pocket presence, also an issue at times with Watson. I think the other guy, another quarterback, is Patrick Mahomes. And I don't know if he ends up being polarizing so much as how much do you value the fact that he's got this unbelievable arm talent. He can make some ridiculous throws. He makes no-look throws and throws off his back foot, has, terrible footwork by NFL standards, but the ball gets there more often than not, and then he'll come back and make some terrible decisions and miss throws that he should absolutely hit. So Patrick Mahomes, do you value him as a guy that has unbelievable upside, or a guy that, simply does not have, would take too much time to coach? So I think Mahomes and Watson, just at the quarterback position, will be two of them. Cam Robinson, the guy I mentioned earlier, I think, some people are just going to go purely on projection for him versus, what I think he's done on the field, which is not play like a first-round player just yet. The other player is Jabril Peppers, who clearly an outstanding college player, did a lot on that Michigan defense. But again, it's a value thing. I think it's a loaded safety class, and people trying to slot in Peppers. Is he a strong safety? Do you want to make him a big nickel linebacker? Trying to figure out his value, where he fits in, because I think he's a very good player. But in a draft that has so many good corners and so many good edge defenders, I think ultimately he gets dropped down the draft board a little bit.
Steve, my last question for you is just the question that I think I get every single day on Twitter, and I think Eagles fans are very, very interested to hear your thoughts on the big debate between the two receivers at the top of this draft, Mike Williams from Clemson, Corey Davis from Western Michigan. Williams is one slot higher on the PFF big board, but what are your personal thoughts on both players? How do you value both of them moving forward through the draft process?
Do you ever use the cop-out that it depends on the quarterback? Because I think that is what it comes down to. Mike Williams is a guy, I think, if Tennessee was looking for a wide receiver, Marcus Mariota is the type of guy. I don't really think he wants to throw a ton of contested catches. He needs a guy that's going to get open. That's Corey Davis, great route runner, shifty. He's going to create separation. For a guy like Marcus Mariota, I think that would be a great fit. Whereas Mike Williams, if you have a QB that's willing to take some chances, like a Joe Flacco of the Ravens, and he's willing to go give his guy a chance to go make plays. That's Mike Williams, who's not going to create a ton of separation, but he's going to win on slants and posts by using his body, using that big frame, and then make some plays downfield with some pretty good downfield ball skills. So I think it depends on the QB. So if you're the Eagles, you know, what is Carson Wentz in that sense? I think he's probably a little bit closer to a Mariota. Would you like a big receiver like Mike Williams to make plays? Absolutely. But I think that sure option, like Corey Davis, a guy that's going to get open, can get open from the slot on the outside, can run vertical routes, can create separation on horizontal routes. I think Corey Davis would be a great fit for the Eagles.
Steve, my last question for you, and we'll get you out of here. How much do you expect your big board to change throughout the rest of the draft process with the way that you guys at PFF evaluate prospects?
Yeah, I mean, we put our initial grades out there as far as pure production, but we have a pretty extensive review process going on right now, going player by player, really diving into what our production grades mean. So I think there'll definitely be some movement. We have a lot of analysts and a lot of, even though we work under the same umbrella and we have the same system of production, and, you know, a lot of different, you know, football minds and, you know, slightly different ways of looking at players. So I think that makes it interesting for us as we reshape the big board as we go. I don't think you'll see massive movement. You know, guys that are in the top 32 probably won't end up as fourth rounders eventually, but I think there'll be a little bit of movement as we dive further into the class and reshape things a little bit.
Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at PFF_Steve. Steve, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Thank you so much, Steve. Now it's time for our unofficial visit. Fran, you had a chance to catch up with Illinois defensive end DeJuan Smoot at the Senior Bowl.
The unofficial visit.
Here now with Illinois defensive end DeJuan Smoot. And DeJuan, for those who have yet to see a play, can you give us a quick scouting report?
Just know that I have like an elite first step. Just look for that first step and just look for me to beat blockers without them even touching me.
So what's the one area you got that first step? Based off feedback from scouts, do you know one area where you definitely want to improve moving forward?
My consistency. I mean, there's times where I can disappear and stuff like that, and I've heard that a lot from scouts. I just need to stay more consistent and really show what I can do on a consistent basis.
Who's the best player that you've seen that's going to be in this draft class? Maybe they're here at this game. The best player that you've gone up against on the offensive line?
I'm thinking Taylor. Motton, yeah, from Western Michigan. Me and him, it's kind of like a rivalry. We played during the season, things like the third game of the season, and we're just going right back out of here.
You guys battle. I remember watching that game, and you were getting in his face, kind of giving it to him a little bit early on. He was getting back. You see it the first day of practice. What is that like when you kind of have that relationship previously, and then you take it here in the game? Obviously, it's a much different situation.
Competition is real, man. Just knowing that I've already seen what he can bring, and he's already seen what I can bring. Right now, we're just trying to get the best of each other.
So talking about the Senior Bowl process, you had a teammate and a friend that went through it last year in Jihad Ward, who was a second-round pick. What kind of advice has he been able to give you throughout this process?
Just to be yourself and just, like, do what you do on a daily basis. We've been blessed enough at Illinois to have some pro coaches and stuff, so we know what these pro coaches want out of you. So we're just doing what we do every day.
I've also often heard that being a pass rusher, obviously it's a lot more than just winning with that first step or winning with your power, depending on how you're built. Talk about the mindset that it takes to know how to attack offensive linemen and what goes into that, because you've got a lot of array of moves in your pass rush arsenal.
You got to have a plan. You got to have a first plan, second plan, third plan. You got to have plenty of plans of action. Like, if the first one doesn't work, you got to have a counter. You just got to always have a plan whenever you're rushing.
I don't want to give you the secret sauce or anything, but what's your favorite way to kind of counter? You're trying to win outside. What's your favorite way to counter?
Favorite way to counter is either to spin or do a little hump by.
Okay. All right, the hump move, the Reggie White, Eagles fans, very familiar with Reggie White. That was a big hump move. Talk about one last thing. In terms of this process, what's one area that you know this week you definitely want to focus in on? Is there a technique spot that you're working with the coaches you know you want to work on over the next couple days?
Just working on my coverage and my coming out of two-point stance. I'm not really used to that. For the last 2 years, I've been coming out of three-point stance. And my first 2 years in college, I did come out of it at a two-point, but I'm just trying to get more get back at it and just come off the ball.
Well, DJ, best of luck. Appreciate the time. Best of luck moving forward throughout the process.
Thank you.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, Fran, you
asked the fans what questions they want answered, and they have responded. It is time for the draft mailbag. So we have a couple questions here we're going to get into and wrap things up here on this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. So first question comes from at Wild Farm Wines. I actually almost want to do a little more research on where that's coming from. But every draft...
You're listening to two winos a little bit, but go ahead.
Yes, of course. So every draft simulation that I use has Leonard Fournette available at number 14. If he is there, is there any way the Eagles do not select him?
I mean, there's always a way that they don't select him. It depends on who else is there. I think the medical check will be important for Fournette. You know, some people worry that this ankle might be something that is a long-term thing. I haven't heard that it is, but some people think so. So that will be big. Look, I think Fournette's the best running back in this class. I got asked a question last night about whether or not he would be better than Ezekiel Elliott, who went number 4. It's tough for me. I haven't answered that question yet because, you know, I have to do more work on Fournette. I love this kid on tape, man. He's so violent. He's instinctive. He's athletic. He's more explosive than given credit for. He's gigantic. I mean, he's got the ability to make people miss. He'll run through you or around you or over you. He's got the ability to win in a lot of different ways. Catches the ball out of the backfield. He's gotten better as a blocker each year. Fournette's a great player. So the question is how is he valued on the Eagles draft board? And if the Eagles value someone higher, then they won't draft him. If they value him higher than the people that are available, then they'll probably take Leonard Fournette.
The Eagles will use a high draft pick on the running back position. We've seen that in the past. We saw it with LeSean McCoy in 2009. Now, that was a second-round pick, so certainly this would be much different. This could be a test of really sticking to the board, though, for the Eagles, where you might be looking at the plethora of cornerbacks available, edge rushers, wide receiver potentially, and you're sitting there, but if Fournette's the best player and running back, it's an underrated need for this football team. You know, Ryan Matthews ended on injured reserve with the herniated disc in his neck. Darren Sproles is not getting any younger. Wendell Smallwood, you don't know if he's going to be that foundation back. And I think back to the conversation that you had with Greg Cosell on your Eagle Eye podcast to wrap up the season. And Cosell firmly believes that the Eagles need to get a foundation back, the guy who you know every week will be the focal point of the rushing game, where it's not like, this week it could be this guy, this week it could be that guy. He thinks that the Eagles really need to find the guy at running back.
Yeah, and I think that if you feel that way, then Fournette is a really good option for that role. What's interesting, though, is that, you know, I think that if you are the Seattle Seahawks, let's say, right, and you were the Seattle Seahawks of the last couple of years where you had Marshawn Lynch and you were feeding them the ball 22, 25 times a game, Fournette is made for that kind of role. But if you're the Eagles, and let's say you want your running back to carry the ball, you know, 13 to 16 times a game, maybe it doesn't need to be a Leonard Fournette. Maybe it can be someone who's a little bit smaller, like a Dalvin Cook or a Christian McCaffrey or someone like that. So it'll be interesting. It's interesting, too, you mentioned the board. Remember, for everyone listening at home, like the big thing with the board is that board gets set weeks in advance, days in advance, you know, but before draft weekend. And the Eagles will look at – they're going to go through all these situations. They'll say, all right, well, if we've got Leonard Fournette and Corey Davis and Marshawn Lattimore, okay, I'll just throw three names out, and we're in this situation, who are we going to pick? And they go through – they hash all of that out in the months of February and March and early April, get all those situations cleared out. So then that way when it happens and they're on the clock and there's 10 minutes and it's ticking down, they're not worried about making that decision. That decision's already made. Now it's just a matter of – pulling the trigger and deciding if there's any other offers that are on the table from other teams or anything else going on that would keep them from making that selection. So they will value all those guys separately leading up to the draft throughout the next couple of months.
All right, so the next question comes from at Birds Are the Word, our good friend. Do you think Joe Douglas's ability to find Jordan Howard for the Bears last year in the fifth round means the Eagles will employ that same philosophy and take it back in later rounds? To me, no, if you're going by the board, it shouldn't. I have a hard time when teams say, or it's more, I guess, fans will say, I'm fine if the team takes this guy, that guy, or that guy at this position, or you can wait for another guy, because all these players are going to be different. And if you have a guy you like, you got just get him. Don't worry about, well, we can wait on this guy. If you have a guy you like, go get him wherever – whenever you pick, so you don't have to worry about missing out on a potential talent. So I don't think it precludes the Eagles from doing anything from – I don't think you could read too much into it just because he took, you know, Jordan Howard and got a, you know, fifth-round steal and was a great running back and seems to be the guy for the Bears now. That means, oh, the Eagles will employ that same.
I don't think Doug and Howie are sitting upstairs right now as we do this podcast saying, like, all right, we're going to worry about receiver and corner and all these other needs. Joe, go find us a running back day three. You worry about that. With now, obviously, they're going to evaluate all these players, and they're going to kind of, just as we talked about before, Nett, they're going to stack the board and value all these positions separately and look and see how they all max out together. I think with Jordan Howard, it was a great example of opportunity and scheme and all that. He ended up being the second leading rusher in the NFL as a rookie. Did they think that he was going to be that year one? If they did, they probably wouldn't have taken him in the fifth round. They probably would have sprung for him in the fourth if they thought he was going to be the second leading rusher in the NFL. So, you know, obviously it was a great pick by them, but I wouldn't rely on that moving forward as a standard.
All right. At RyanCast83 wants to know, what's your take on Marlon Mack and Kareem Hunt? He thinks they offer incredible value at the end of the third/fourth round.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are slating Hunt for that area, 5'10 and a half, 208 pounds. I broke him down very extensively on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast last week in the scouting report segment. I like Hunt. You know, I think that he's got a lot of traits that you want from an NFL ball carrier. His contact balance, I think he's really decisive. He uses a stiff arm. He's always staying alive. I like everything about his game. He does need to get a little bit better as a blocker. I think there are issues about his weight kind of fluctuating a little bit. There were issues off the field early in his career. So there are some questions he's going to have to answer. But overall, I think he's a pretty well-rounded back, even though he's not the most explosive ball carrier in the draft. And I do think that he's probably in that third, maybe early fourth round range. And then you mentioned Marlon Mack. I just had a chance to watch Mack earlier this week. He's explosive. You know, he's 6 foot, 210 pounds. He's not the biggest kid. He's kind of a longer, lankier running back, which I usually like those kinds of guys. Like I liked, who was the kid, Blue? Alfred Blue from LSU a couple years ago. Like he's kind of built similarly to Blue. Mack is really, he's been super productive, was a first-team all-conference player all 3 years at USF, and is a really interesting talent. My thing is that he's got that short area burst in a straight line. He's got that long speed. I like his length. I don't know that he's got great vision inside between the tackles, enough so that you would say he would be a feature back and say that, you know, I think Kareem Hunt's vision is way better than Marlon Mack's. You know, even though Mack is more explosive, I think Mack does need to get a little bit tougher at times. I think that I saw that. And then also in pass protection, like Hunt, he does need to improve. So there are areas where Kareem Hunt is certainly worlds ahead of a Marlon Mack. But in some ways, I mean, Mack is definitely more explosive of an athlete. So it depends on what you're looking for. Mack can do a lot of different things as well.
Didn't realize that the draft mailbag segment was going to be running backs. Yes. Last one here from @ChewMarinin. And if I mispronounce it, I apologize. Give us a scouting report on Tennessee's Alvin Kamara.
Yeah, I had a chance to do him as well this week. And a guy that is a really good athlete, 5'10", 215 pounds. Was kind of the focal point for much of the season this year for the Volunteers, but was really a backup for most of his career. Started his career at Alabama, left because of off-the-field issues, went to junior college, ended up in Tennessee. All the quotes coming from Tennessee, from Butch Jones, teammates, everything, he's a Boy Scout. He was a team captain this year as a junior, saying all the right things. So what player are you getting in terms of off the field? But on the field, you have a great athlete. He's an outstanding receiver, catches the ball effortlessly, runs good routes. I think he does a really good job with the ball in his hands. The question is, kind of like Marlon Mack, does he have the vision to be an every down guy? Does he have the mindset? He's never carried the ball 20 times in his entire career in one game. So does he have the mindset to be a feature back? Or is he more of that Tevin Coleman, you know, Robin to a Leonard Fournette Batman kind of player? As a guy that's really kind of a really dynamic number two option, which is good. You take that if you're, you know, a team looking for help in the backfield. But it's just a matter of making sure that you've found the right role. But Kamara's a really, really intriguing player. The combine is going to be very big for him.
All right, so that's going to do it for our draft mailbag and for the entire edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Again, special thanks to Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus for joining us here this week. Shout out to our producer, Brian Thomas. Again, if you want to hear a certain segment, if you want any questions answered, make sure to follow us on Twitter, Franz at FDuffy3. You can shoot us anything at Eagles. I'm Chris McPherson, and for Fran Duffy,
thank you. At CMAC Eagles.
At CMAC Eagles, yes. You know, but pretty much it's Fran sending me a question. I don't know if it was serious or not. about doing all 22 analysis of the Super Bowl. I just shook my head.
It was late at night, and I thought, you know what, C-Mac's going to get a kick out of this.
It was a good laugh. I did enjoy it very much. So for everyone, thank you very much again, whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher. Make sure to rate and leave a comment. That's going to do it for this edition. We will see you, hopefully, back with Alex Smith next week.